Welcome to Passion and Purpose with Pamela, celebrating all things woman. I'm Dr. Pamela Hardy Shepherd, here to ignite inspiration through conversations that spotlight women's power and their journeys. Let's share our light, our stories, and create a space of celebration for every woman. Here's to embracing our womanhood together.
Today, we are honored to have a remarkable guest whose career exemplifies dedication to service and public health. Carolyn, the founder and CEO of Healthcare Connection Group, LLC. Carolyn has carved out a vital role in the healthcare industry, offering specialized and expertise to government agencies, healthcare organizations, elected officials, and private entities, focusing on improving health outcomes for the medically vulnerable. Originally, Carolyn is from California. Carolyn's journey has taken her across the United States from coast to coast, even to the Dominican Republic. These experiences have shaped her unique perspective on healthcare and service. A proud California State University East Bay graduate with a Bachelor's of Science in Health Sciences and Biology, Carolyn's thirst for knowledge and passion for public health led her to earn a Master's in Public Health from San Diego State University. Her dedication to addressing health disparities and advocating for the underserved communities was ignited there. Her professional journey began as an administrative fellow for a large healthcare system in Portland, Oregon. It later took her to Chicago, where she joined the Centers for Medicare and Medicaid Services, CMS. Carolyn became a trailblazer at CMS, gaining federal oversight for some of the nation's largest healthcare systems and earning the prestigious CMS Administrator Special Citation Award for her groundbreaking work on the National Star Rating Team. These accomplishments underscore though her role as a technical authority, a strategic visionary in the nation's healthcare system delivery system. Carolyn's personal story is as inspiring as her professional achievements. Having received Medicaid as a child, she has a deeply personal connection to her advocacy for vulnerable populations. Her work has been centered on enhancing healthcare access, reducing disparities, and improving outcomes for those who need it most. Carolyn is truly a change maker. In her healthcare industry, she combines hands-on experience, strategic leadership, and an unwavering commitment to public health service. So today, I want you to join us as we delve into her incredible story, her incredible journey, the lessons she has learned, and the passion that drives her mission to make her a lasting impact on the world of healthcare. Let's give a warm welcome to Carolyn Scott.
Dr. Hardy Shepherd. My name is Carolyn Scott, but I've been in healthcare for 30 years, and it's amazing to me, you know, that it's been that long, and I've learned a lot along the way. During those 30 years in healthcare, I started off working in hospital administration. I also was a health educator earlier in my career. Currently, I'm the CEO and founder of Healthcare Solutions Group. And in that organization, I do healthcare consulting. I help organizations who are trying to determine their best way of delivering healthcare. Also under that business, we do have a non-emergency medical transportation business, and we are in the process of expanding both into the Atlanta and Houston areas this summer in 2025. So that's in the works. We'll talk about transportation a little bit later as it relates to healthcare, because that is indeed a gap. Prior to my healthcare career, I grew up in California, and I was often in underserved areas where there wasn't a lot of healthcare providers, there wasn't a lot of resources, bit of a food desert. So I have a personal passion for this.
You said food desert. What is that?
So a food desert. So we're going to get into that a little bit more into our conversation when we start talking about things that impact your health that aren't necessarily related to a hospital or a doctor or anything like that. Food deserts are communities where the population just don't have access to fresh fruits and vegetables. They might have a local family-owned grocery store where they might have a lot of canned goods, pops, snacks, things like that, but trying to get a fresh orange or apple is very limited. And we all know those are things that do impact your long-term health. So I will say the US healthcare system is starting to look more closely at those things because we realize that our human lives are not in a vacuum. There's so many things that impact our health that in the past we looked at an individual as just as a human where they need health care and we're only looking at, their asthma or their colds or anything like that, and not looking at the air quality where they live or whether or not there's a bus system where they can get to their doctor's appointment on time. So we're going to talk about those kind of things as
Awesome.
we get more into our conversation. And as I've mentioned, healthcare is just a personal passion of mine. And our purpose today, or what I'd like to discuss today, is just to talk about a broad overview of the US healthcare system. So,
That
how does it?
sounds wonderful. Let's go. Let's delve down into it. I'm excited.
Okay. All right. So as I was preparing for our discussion today, I ran into a news story where they were talking about how the United States became very car dependent. And that in some ways, it was intentional, and in other ways, it just kind of ended up that way based on how laws are written, things that are zoned for buildings and for streets and things like that. And what we've found is that the reason the US has become so car dependent, as opposed to other industrialized countries like in Europe, for example, Amsterdam, is that there were systems put into place starting at the turn of the century when cars became more popular, where our systems, our infrastructure was set up for cars. When you go to Amsterdam, that is not the case. They have parking lots that are literally 5 and 6 stories that are just for bikes.
Bikes.
And when you're in neighborhoods, they're very walkable. The people live, eat, and play all in the same place. And most of the streets are for pedestrians. It's not for cars. That, cars are secondary. The bike lanes get a lot more preferential treatment than do cars. I use that example because the US healthcare system is very similar in how we developed into where we are today. And so we're going to talk about that and some of the changes that are being proposed to start to look more like other countries who have more integrated healthcare systems than we do.
Awesome. Awesome. I'm excited. Let's go.
Okay, so there's some key things I want to touch on. We're going to talk about public versus private pay for healthcare systems. We'll get into that a little bit. We're also going to talk about healthcare access as well, and we're going to talk about what is referred to as social determinants of health, or you might see in the media SDOH. That's what that stands for, social determinants of health. And again, those are those things that impact all of us in our daily lives that are not directly related to a hospital or a doctor or anything specifically related to healthcare, but it does impact our health overall. And then lastly, we'll talk about the quality of healthcare that we have in the US and how it might compare to other developed countries. So with that, let's start off talking about how the US healthcare system is set up. So I mentioned that there's both public and private pay. So I am going to share my screen to kind of give you a visual of what that looks like. So we're going to zone in into how healthcare is funded. You can see there's public funding, and there's also private funding, and we also have a mixed funding approach as well. So let's start with the public funding. So right now in the US healthcare system, there is public funding that supports healthcare. And the two main federal organizations that provide funding is our Veterans Health Administration. We also refer to it as the VA. And then we also have the Department of Health and Human Services. So under the Veterans Administration, we have what's called TRICARE. And that's for active military and their family members. So when you're in the military, your healthcare is covered. And again, that is through TRICARE. And then the other source of funding for veterans are for those who have left military service and are receiving healthcare through the Veterans Administration. So That's one source of public funding. The other one is through the Department of Health and Human Services. And a lot of times we don't necessarily hear this title, HHS. We usually hear reference to Medicare. And Medicare is for individuals who are either 65 and older. If you work so many quarters within the United States, you automatically qualify for Medicare at the age of 65. There are also some people under the age of 65 with certain disabilities who also are eligible for Medicare. One example is for individuals who have end-stage renal disease, which is also kidney failure, who is on dialysis. You can be under 65 and qualify for Medicare under those conditions. So again, certain disabilities. The other source of public funding is Medicaid, and this is for low-income individuals. Very often, young mothers become eligible for Medicaid. And also, this is not something that's commonly known, but up to 50% of births in the United States is funded by Medicaid. And in some states, it's well over 60%. So Medicaid has proven to be a critical part of the United States healthcare system. There are other lesser known organizations that also provide healthcare. For example, there is Indian Health Services, where they provide healthcare to individuals who are residing on reservations. Another example are like rural health centers or federally qualified health centers. Those are federally funded health centers that provide healthcare on a sliding scale for individuals based on their income level. A population that sometimes is forgotten about but is a critical part of our population are the rural residents, and some of them actually have to travel hours to be able to get to their healthcare appointments. There are some zip codes where there might not even be a provider at all that's available.
That's right.
So again, those are examples of public-funded
Before you
healthcare.
go from there, there's something I would, before you, can you go back to
Oh,
that, if you don't mind?
yes.
There's something I want to add to that, and it has to do with the military, because I know the military, where you said TRICARE. Well, when you're a veteran, if you're getting, actually, if you're getting Medicare, you have to apply for TRICARE for life. So you have Medicare and TRICARE for life. And that's really important, because it's like with the other HMOs, they have other things with, when you have Medicare. But those who have been veterans who have served, and they can have Medicare and TRICARE for life. So it actually helps with the other costs. And I just wanted to add that.
So, in that scenario where the person has both TRICARE and Medicare, which one pays first? So, if I go to my doctor
Medicare.
and I have both, who pays for my care first?
Usually Medicare pays for your care first, but there are things that Medicare doesn't pay for that TRICARE may. And TRICARE doesn't pay a huge amount. It is a supplemental. And so you have that. But if you, they, it is so interesting, because once you reach that age, you get something from the department, the DOD, and the DOD says, if you want TRICARE for life, you have to apply for Medicare. And you can't have one without the other. You can have one without the other, but you can't have TRICARE for life without Medicare. So
Thank you for that.
you're so welcome. It's only because I know.
And you bring up a good point, Pam. There are instances where individuals do qualify for more than one source of health care. For example, there are individuals that are considered dual eligible. And what that means is an individual qualified both for Medicare and Medicaid. So I mentioned Medicare, you can get it at 65 or older or with certain disabilities. Medicare is limited into what it does cover. There's Medicare Part A, which is hospital coverage. Medicare Part B, which is your doctor's visits, and there's also Medicare Part D, which covers your drugs, your prescription drugs. But there's no dental coverage. There's also no eyeglass coverage under traditional Medicare. And then with Medicaid, as I mentioned, some people can qualify for both. Medicaid is the largest payer for long-term care services. Many people who receive Medicare are surprised to find out that long-term care is not covered. And as you can imagine, as our population is getting older, long-term care, it has is becoming much long-term care is something that is almost inevitable. Most people are going to need it at some point, and Medicare does not cover that. And many individuals who have Medicare are very surprised when they get to the point where they need it. And so that's where Medicaid kicks in. But you have to understand, Medicaid is very restrictive when it comes to eligibility. And they do what's called a look back study, where they look back quite a few years. So, because you have to truly be considered low income. And so when families find out, oh, well, let's try and get Medicaid, and they try and sell their house, their parents' home, or pull out money from the bank, that's not going to work, because the government is going to look back so many years to see whether or not that has happened. And if it has, then Medicaid eligibility is not going to be considered. So I do think as our population is getting older, that is something that families do need to consider. Right now, with demographics, 10,000 people a day turn 65.
That's
And
all.
that has been for the last 5 years or so. And that's projected to continue through about 2035 or 2040, where people who are 65 or older are going to make up about 20 to 25% of the US population. So, as you can imagine, and most of our health care is a cost comes from very sick babies in the very beginning that are in the NICU, the intensive care unit, and then our senior population. In the middle, we don't generally spend as much on health care. So as you can imagine, as our demographics shift to us being an older population, and the US is becoming one of the older populations out of our developed countries, the impact on health care is going to be very significant. And that's why our US department is really trying to make changes to be able to address that.
You've paid into a system, and you want to get the benefit of that system. So no one's given you anything. So that's what I'm going to say. I earned this because they took my money all my life since I was 17. So I use it when I need it.
That's a very good point. Medicare is not a handout, neither is Medicaid. All of that is when you're actively working and you're able to contribute. Those tax dollars that we see out of our check every couple weeks, that's paying for our health care, for Medicare. So that's something you've already paid into that you are eligible for.
Gotcha.
A really good point. We always hear, well, the Medicare trust fund is going to be gone by the time I'm eligible for it. And over time, that's starting to feel more and more true. Because as our population gets older, there's fewer young people to pay into the
There you
system.
go.
When Medicare was created in 1965 under the New Deal, the intent was, one, people weren't living as long. So
That's
when you
right.
turned 65, the anticipation was that you were not going to be receiving Medicare until 102, which a lot of people are now. And they weren't anticipating that our population was going to start to skew older and there were going to be fewer people to help to pay into the system. But something that's important to keep in mind, I mentioned there's different parts of Medicare. When they're talking about the Medicare fund no longer being solvent, they are specifically talking about Medicare Part A.
Yes.
Because that Part A is the hospital insurance. So whenever you hear, oh, it's going to become insolvent, they're specifically speaking about Medicare Part A, hospital insurance. Medicare Part B, once you're eligible for Medicare Part B, you do have a monthly copay that you have to pay. So
So
that keeps that keeps that fund going because you're, in addition to the taxes you've already paid for Medicare Part A for hospital, you still will continue to have to pay a portion for Medicare Part B, which are doctor's visits, just your routine visits and x-rays and some of the basic things that you need within healthcare. So that's an important piece to know as well. So that's a general overview of how the US government pays for our healthcare coverage. There are other smaller programs, for example, Ryan White funding, that's for individuals who meet certain income levels and are HIV positive. They do get support paying for their prescriptions. That's a very small population, but that's just one example of other smaller programs that exist within the federal government to help support individuals with receiving adequate health care.
So
So moving from public funding, we're going to go into private funding. So this is where the US is a little bit different than a lot of other developed countries, because private funding for healthcare typically is tied to employment. And often when you lose your employment, you lose your health insurance as well. You can get what's called COBRA. Let's say you leave a job. I think jobs are required to offer you what's called COBRA coverage, where you pay for your health insurance at the cost that they're paying for it. And I think a lot of people are surprised to find, if you're relatively healthy, mid-30s, mid-40s, it's still going to be about $700, $800 a month.
Yes, it's
Yeah,
crazy.
so, and that's where we differ from other countries because in other countries, they don't tie their health insurance to employment. So our neighbors to the north in Canada, they have what's considered national health coverage. I will say that their residents do pay more in insurance, I'm sorry, in taxes to cover the cost. But if you step back and look at how much US citizens are paying out of pocket for co-pays and for prescriptions and a lot of the out-of-pocket costs that we have to pay, in some instances, it still might be less out of pocket if you're paying more in taxes for that health care than what we are paying, when we're paying for the out-of-pocket costs that are required of us, our deductibles. And there was a recent study done by the Commonwealth Fund where they found out that within the last decade, even those individuals who are getting their health care through their employers are still paying like 20% more than as recent as about 10 years ago. And this really is not sustainable. I've already talked about a couple things, an older population, as people are becoming more and more self-employed, as that seems to be more of a trend, people are going to be paying, either going without health insurance or going to be paying out of pocket. So the model that we have really needs to catch up to where our society is and where we're headed. Change comes fast. So we really do
It
need to
does.
start thinking about what we have now just isn't sustainable.
No, it's not.
And in recent years, for those of you who remember, under President Obama, he signed in what was called the Affordable Care Act, or affectionately referred to as Obamacare. That was one of the first steps in trying to address some of these real hard issues that we're facing. For example, right now, the way healthcare is generally paid for is what we call fee for service. The acronym you might see, FFS, fee for service. And all that means is we pay for volume. So as many times as you go see your doctor, they just put in bills or go to the hospital. They submit bills to the government or to the health insurance company just based on volume. And as I mentioned, we're getting older in our country, as well as we're becoming more self-employed. So to not have checks and balances and just allowing doctors and hospitals to, provide all these tests and x-rays without any oversight, that is revenue generating for them. But how is that benefiting us, as a individual or as a family seeking health care? And there's also a recent study that came out that talks about how the US population is spending so much money out of pocket, but when you compare our healthcare outcomes to
Oh
other
my goodness.
countries,
Yes.
it's the outcome we fall very at the bottom of the list.
We
One
do.
example is with maternity care,
Yes.
maternal and child health. In the United States, women die in childbirth much more than other countries. Even in developing countries, their
Yes.
birth outcomes are better than in the United States.
Isn't that
Same thing
crazy?
with infant mortality and
Yeah.
low birth weight babies. That number is much higher in the United States. We spend, compared to our, I think the country that's closest to us that spend on health care is like 30% less than what we spend, but
Yes.
their health outcomes far exceed the health outcomes here in the United States.
Why do you think that is?
I think the system that we have needs a lot of improvement. I mentioned that we do a lot of fee for service where the incentive for the doctor to provide care, they run a lot of tests and things like that. The other thing I think in the US healthcare system, we focus on individual components. You have the eye doctor, you have a
Which,
podiatrist, you have a cardiologist, and a lot of times they don't really talk to each other.
no.
And a lot of the ailments are systemic. A lot of them are correlated, but the way that we've set up our healthcare system, where it's very individualized, doctors are very highly specialized, often where they don't really talk to each other, have very limited contact. That's part of the issue. That isn't as common in other developing countries where you have more of a healthcare, a holistic approach to healthcare. So I do think that's part of the issue. And, I mentioned private pay, employer-sponsored healthcare. What there's under that, there's two main approaches. One is what we call managed care. And you might see that written somewhere, a health maintenance organization or managed care organization. And what that is you have to go within a particular network to see doctors. You can't go outside of that network. And they employ their physicians, they own the hospitals, and you can't go outside of that because it won't be paid for. An example for those of you on the West Coast, I think a little of them on the East Coast as well, is Kaiser Permanente. So if you and I know not all of you are familiar with Kaiser, but I would encourage you to look it up, Kaiser. And what that is once you have Kaiser, you get a Kaiser card with your name, ID number. The only place you can get health care is within Kaiser. And you have to go through what's called a primary care doctor or PCP. And then that doctor makes a determination about whether or not you can go see a specialist. The challenge with that is that primary care doctor, that PCP, is being watched very closely to see what their referral patterns are. How much are you costing Kaiser based on your referrals? So that primary care doctor who might not be a specialist in cardiology or podiatry, they're going to try and treat you as much as they can within their purview of understanding of whatever that ailment is before they refer you to a specialist.
That's
Because
right.
ultimately, it's about cost.
Sorry, I gotta do it. It's about the money, honey.
And so that is called a managed care organization or HMO. You might see that name as well. And so with Kaiser, you literally cannot go anywhere else. The other common model is called a preferred provider option, PPO, preferred provider option. So this one is you are able to go and see any doctor you want. So I'll give an example of a big one, Blue Cross Blue Shield. So let's say you have Blue Cross Blue Shield and you choose the PPO option. You can literally go to any doctor you want. However, they still do have a network. So Blue Cross Blue Shield reach out to doctors in your area and say, "Hey, we're going to be providing health insurance. Will you contract with us?" And those doctors will agree to contract and receive a certain reimbursement amount, for those Blue Cross Blue Shield members. With the PPO, you can go outside of a doctor that they don't have a contract with, but you're going to be paying a lot more out of pocket because they haven't negotiated a contract with those doctors that are not part of that network. Many people do prefer the PPO model, but it depends. You kind of have to do the math based on your needs, your healthcare needs, to see which one is
That's
more
true.
advantageous, which one saves more money. I have noticed that people who have young children, we know children are getting colds and asthma, breaking arms. They find that a cost savings by going with that HMO or that managed care model, they find a cost savings. So many families with young children choose to go that way. Because it's more cost containment. But for individuals who might have more chronic conditions or just want to choose which providers they can see and not be directed, choose the PPO model. So it's really hard to say which one costs more because it's very individualistic based on what
It
your
really
needs
is.
are.
It is. That's a great point. And people, you really need to hear that because it's based on you. It's not based on what your next door neighbor has. You have to look at your life and make sure you're selecting the right one, the HMO or the PPO or original Medicare or the HMO type, like Advantage Care, those kind of things. You have to really look at your life and see what's really important. So those are great points, Carolyn. Those are great.
Thank you for bringing that up. And maybe in a future discussion, we can talk get into more detail about Medicare and Medicaid, like the eligibility. I mentioned a few parts. I mentioned Part A, B, and D for the drug benefit. Pamela just alluded to Medicare Part C. We're not going to get into details about that, but Medicare Part C is similar to that managed care model that we talked about. But that we can save that for a future discussion because that's a whole nother discussion
Yes.
unto itself. but a very necessary one. 65, 10,000 people a day turn 65, and that's
Wow.
projected through like 2040. So we do need to talk
That's
about that as
amazing.
well.
That's amazing.
Yeah, it is really amazing. So we talked about public funding. So that was the Veterans Administration, that was Medicare, Medicaid. We talked about private funding, which is the employer sponsored health care. And under that, you can get like the HMO or the PPO. We talked a little bit about the Affordable Care Act. The Affordable Care Act was about a thousand page policy, a piece of legislation. So there were so many things in it. But one of the things was allowing individuals to be able to get health care without tying it to their employer. And so we have what's called marketplaces. If you just Google marketplace.gov, you'll be able to go in there and see health plans that are available that you can buy off the marketplace as an individual. I will say, with the changes in different administrations, the cost associated with it and what's covered has fluctuated a lot. The original intent of the Affordable Care Act was it to be the cost was to be very similar to what you pay if you had a job. So, some jobs you might pay $150 out of each paycheck, for example, so about $300 a month for coverage. That fluctuates again depending on what's going on in our political environment. It can fluctuate to be twice that. And some of them, they have really high deductibles where you have to spend $5,000 out of pocket before, your coverage kicks in. But I would encourage you just to learn, even if you're employed and have sponsored health coverage. Who knows what the future holds? It's always nice to be aware. So just go to marketplace.gov, play with it a little bit. You put in your information, your age, if you have any chronic conditions, and it'll tell you how much you would have to pay for health care if you did not have employer-sponsored health care and you're not qualified for Medicare or Medicaid, which is a huge swath of our population
That's right.
falls into that. So I would encourage you, just as a homework assignment, to take some time to go and look at that. The other one I wanted to talk about is there is a mix of how healthcare is paid for, a combination of public and private. And where we see that the most is with Medicaid. In many states, the state Medicaid program contracts with these managed care organizations, Blue Cross Blue Shield, Aetna, Humana, that's the big ones. There's smaller ones as well. They contract with a state. So we'll use the state of, I don't know, we'll say Arizona for an example. So Blue Cross, Blue Shield, Aetna, like all these different health plans, they go to the state. The state, looks at what they offer and make a selection and say, okay, we'll contract with you. If you have Medicaid in a state that has managed care, that Medicaid population has to go within that network, that Blue Cross Blue Shield network or Aetna or whatever. So there's examples of where public and private comes together to provide care as well. And there's a model similar for Medicare as well.
That's good to know.
So the other thing I wanted to talk about, well, before I move on, did you have any questions
I
about?
do.
Okay.
I do. I have a question about one of the things that you did mention about we basically do not know what our environment, our political environment is going to be. And I know you don't know the future, but what would you say? If I am getting ready to, I'm going to be 65 or, and, in terms of my health care instead of in terms of getting Medicare or we'll just say Medicaid, how should I think about this? And I know you can't tell anybody, but what are some of the things we should be thinking about in this process? Because you did say do our homework, and I like that because it's so important. But we just don't know what the future holds. So I'm kind of like, oh, I don't know what to do.
Thank you for that question. So healthcare is something we all need. Whether or not we have health insurance or not, we still need it. And I think look, we're focusing on the public access to healthcare. So that's Medicaid and Medicare. If you have an employer-sponsored health insurance plan, that's great. But let's say you are, we'll start with Medicare. With I will say, and it's unfortunate that we have to tie healthcare to politics. The Medicare population tends to be more vocal when they vote, and
Yes.
so Medicare is less likely to be impacted, at least immediately, with what we're seeing that's going on in our healthcare. I mean, in our political arena right now, healthcare is a target. I will say Medicare, the way as it stands right now, it's something that they're probably going to look at, within the next 4 years of this administration. But I think that can is being kicked down the road a little bit because that population tends to be more vocal. They vote more, more financially stable because they don't have young kids, they're trying to raise. So Medicare is probably going to look the same, at least for the foreseeable future within the next couple of years. Medicaid, that's the big question mark. What I've noticed is that a lot of states now are just at a standstill. There are some states that were looking to expand their Medicaid offerings through managed care statewide. That was the intent. Because some states they only offered in the more populous counties of a state. For example, in Nevada, it's only Medicaid managed care is only offered in two counties, the most populous counties.
Really?
So in Las Vegas, I mean in Nevada, that would be Las Vegas and Reno. So in the middle, the Medicaid population is relied on fee for service, which is a challenge because there's literally some zip codes where there's not a doctor or a hospital. So that's a challenge in Nevada. So Nevada was looking to expand statewide to help the population in the rural communities. And Nevada's predominantly rural. A lot of people don't think of Nevada as a rural state.
They
It's
don't.
extremely rural. If you live outside of Reno or Las Vegas, and there's plenty of people who do, your access to health care is very limited.
Wow.
Nevada was looking to go statewide. Hopefully they still will, but until they're clear about the direction this administration is taking, that's going to be put on hold for a little bit until whatever, next
Whatever
steps are going to be.
happens, yes. Okay, thank
So
you for
there's
that.
just a lot of unknowns right now, but my assessment is just purely my assessment of being in healthcare for the last 30 years. I actually used to be a policy analyst for Medicare and Medicaid, so I helped to write actually some of the policies that are in place now or were in place during my time at the government. It's a little bit of a wait and see, unfortunately. And as I mentioned, based on my experience and assessment, I think Medicare is going to be okay for the next year or two. Just continue to do what you've always done. Medicaid, that's the big question mark. We just don't know. And I mentioned Medicare is kind of status quo, but remember I said that Medicare does not cover long-term care coverage,
Nope.
which is extremely expensive.
Yes, it
Literally hundreds of dollars a day
is.
for adequate long-term care. Medicaid pays that, but it's for the very low income. So if you're a Medicare beneficiary and looking at the need for long-term care, then you might want to also kind of pay attention to what's happening with Medicaid in your state as well. So yeah, I wish I could be more definitive, but whenever there's a change in administration, there's always questions about what's next. But I think with our current administration, those questions are even more broad and there's a,
Exactly.
more of an unknown. So unfortunately, we're talking about our healthcare, but a little bit of it is a wait and see, which
Yeah.
doesn't feel good, but that's where we
No,
are
it
right now.
doesn't. And for those who are entering that stage of their life, I'm sure it is. It's an uneasy feeling to not know really what's going to happen, especially when you've worked all your life and you have planned and all the things that you have done, and it's like, how's that going to affect us? But the one thing you said about doing your homework, and I would say always have a plan B. You got to have a plan B in this arena today. You really do.
Yes.
And I thank
Yes.
you for really saying that because I know there's a lot of people saying I don't fit Medicaid or Medi-Cal is in California, but I do fit this, and I'm looking for my future and what does my future look like? And to your point, we don't know, but I get your point about it being kicked down the road. And you are when you're talking about baby boomers, we are very vocal. Oh, we're gonna vote and we're gonna get out there and we're gonna say what we gotta say. And if you see everybody, they'll hold the signs and they'll push back. And that is the generation that pushes back. And then Gen was it Xers? What are
X's after boomers, yes,
Yeah,
Generation
because
X.
even because they push back too. They push back too, and they're going into that. So what you're saying here today, you think, well, I'm not that old. Yeah, but you're going to be.
And it comes fast.
That's it. Because it's like, oh, that's for the old people. No. You need to know what's going to be there. Because do you remember when we were in the Graduate School of Public Health and they said, oh, Social Security will be this. Medicare will be this. They told us that back in 1994, 95, 96. We graduated in 96. So we know. So we know it's always been there. Somebody's always trying to change it. So I am so glad you're here today because the younger Gen Xers need to hear this because they're
Absolutely.
going there.
And you bring up a good point that I didn't think about earlier that I think is critical when you asked about potential changes. I mentioned Medicare eligibility under most circumstances start at the age of 65. There is some rumblings of pushing that age
Yes.
older too.
So is it to 70?
To 70.
That's crazy.
Because of
Can you imagine?
because oh no, I can't. I don't want to imagine that. But that's some of the ramblings. What I'm sharing today is as it looks like today. Do your homework. Anybody that's 30 and older, anybody, period, but definitely 30 and older, do your homework. We talked about public funding. Ask AI, describe public funding for
I know.
healthcare, look at private funding because most bankruptcies in the United States is because of healthcare costs. That's
Right.
the, yeah. And prior to the current administration, there were discussions about removing healthcare bills and things like that off of your credit report. I'm not sure if that will continue under this administration, simply because healthcare has been such a huge disruptor in many people's lives, and we're ambulatory. I'm using a medical term. We're up and walking around now. We're fine. One thing can change that. You can walk out your front door and slip on some ice and twist your ankle.
That's right.
That is not a cheap visit to the doctor. Because we have health insurance, we're kind of shielded a little bit from that. But if you don't have health insurance and you twist your ankle, that could be a financial disruptor that can change the trajectory of a lot of things in your life. And I'm talking about something kind of minor, which is a twisted ankle. Crutches are not cheap. Casts are not cheap. You would be paying for all of that out of pocket. But let's say something more drastic. You find out you have some chronic condition, like insulin, for example, with diabetes, and the numbers of people who are being diagnosed with type 2 diabetes is increasing quite a bit too. Insulin is not cheap. There used to be a limit on the cost for insulin under this new administration that has gone away. So we all need to be active drivers and participants in our health care. I think we as a population in the United States have been kind of backseat drivers when it comes to health care. We just assume it's always going to be there and it's always going to look the same. It is changing people. It is really changing in ways that will impact you. And we cannot afford to wait until our 65th birthday or assume that it's going to be there. And we need to look at the state of our healthcare system as it is today and plan accordingly.
Love it. Thank you so much. So I know that you have a whole lot more to discuss, and I would like to ask you, would you come back and talk about social determinants and all those other things, the rural community and the quality of health, because those are things so very important, and I would hope that you would come back and maybe we could actually make a series out of this and I think the audience would really love that. And it's because we're trying to ensure that we educate people to what is going forward. And as Carolyn said, you cannot wait until you're 65. Not in this arena today. You just can't.
Not at all.
So, Carolyn Scott, we thank you so much for coming and sharing. And you get the last word. What is it that you need to tell folks here?
Absolutely.
Tell them.
Well, to answer your question, healthcare is there's so many different tentacles to it, and it might seem confusing when you're thinking about all these different components. What we talked about today was literally just a helicopter view, just a broad overview of our healthcare system, of how it's paid for and the different components. But I would welcome the opportunity to come back and provide some very specifics. I would love to do that. And again, I can't stress enough for individuals to start looking and just researching healthcare coverage on their own. And even look at what other countries are doing. What are they doing in Europe and in Canada and other places? And use your voice. Call your elected officials. Like, it makes a difference. One of my other jobs I had was helping elected officials respond to questions that came in specifically related to healthcare. And I use that example simply because I know they listen. And if once you've educated yourself about the healthcare system, reach out and say, look, these are some of my concerns. What are you going to do about it? Because they work for us. It's not the other way around. And healthcare is something that impacts everyone within the sound of my voice. And if it's not impacting you today, it will impact you at some point. So be a driver. Don't be be proactive. Don't be reactive when it comes to healthcare. And I think it's intentional that it's not something that's talked about in our media a lot because it keeps us kind of passive about the whole thing. But we can no longer afford to do that anymore. So with that, thank you so much for this opportunity. And feel free to, if you want to attach the slide deck, so people, if they want to look at it, they can.
Awesome.
And if anyone wants to reach me or learn more about the healthcare system, the best way to reach me is on LinkedIn. Just look up Carolyn Scott MPH. Carolyn Scott, Masters of Public Health. It's just Carolyn Scott MPH on LinkedIn. I'm always posting articles and information that I think is useful for most people when it comes to the healthcare system and making informed decisions that's going to
For their
work for you.
family.
Thank
Good,
you.
Carolyn. And we will definitely put those in the notes for you. So reach out to her. She is a great asset. And we will see you next time. Thank you. And thank you, Carolyn. Have a great day, everyone. Bye-bye.
Bye.
Thank you all for joining us today on Passion and Purpose. It's been wonderful to connect with you, and I hope you found our conversation as enlightening and inspiring as I have. A huge thanks to our guests who contributed to the discussion and share their experiences and insights. Your stories are the heartbeat of this podcast, and it's a joy to explore our passions and purpose together. I'm Pamela, reminding you to live with passion and purpose. Until next time, take care and keep reaching for your dreams.